Thank you, Tom.
Hey, everybody. My name's Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. And just let me say, it's great to be here and to be at this meeting. I'm not sure that I've been at this meeting before, but already there's such happy faces. And it makes a difference to this Episcopalian to see happy faces, because normally at church they're not so happy. I recently was at my church service and I said, "Are you happy?" They didn't know. They turned to one another and said, "Are we happy? Are we happy?" And one of them said, "We're happy." I said, "Show your face." But your face says no. You happy tonight?
Yeah.
Beautiful. And they all heard that on the tape. And you never know where the tapes go. So it's beautiful. It's wonderful to be here. It's an honor. Well, just as some of you should know, I have a little jet lag because on Thursday I flew to England. And I didn't get there till Friday to do my mother's cremation service. In 91 she died. And I came back just, I had Friday night, and then I came back on Saturday, so I could be back Saturday night. So it's been a little bit of a, you can imagine, quite a bit of travel. By the way, my father died in 1991, my mother was 91, my father died a year before. So my mother was wanting to join him. Very interesting, because my father had a great sense of humor, and he gave me the swing before he died. He just gave me the ring. He's just a very dramatic man, unlike me. Just gave me the ring. And I went into him. And I said, "What about the watch?" "I got a watch." Okay. But by the way, it's very important for you to have a sense of humor. It's very important. Nobody got sober to be bored. Because your sense of humor is very, very important. And my mother had a sense of humor, too. She told me a joke before, not long, when I visited her 3 or 4 months ago. Because she was in a nursing home. And she said there were 2 old ladies in a nursing home. And they were playing cards. And then one of the old ladies turned to the other old lady and said, "Janet, Janet. Janet." She said, "Yes." "It's Janet, you've got a suppository in your ear." She says, "What?" She said, "You've got a suppository in your ear." Janet said, "Now I know where the hearing aid is." By the way, just for you to know, this is a spiritual program. It's not a religious program. There are some people who happen to be religious. But by the way, Charles, you did a great 10-minute. And I heard you mention agnostic. There are people agnostic, there are people religious. I've been very fortunate in my speaking. I've been able to speak in places like Thailand, which is Buddhist, spoken in India, which is Hindu. So we have to be very careful about this. And by the way, with the 12 steps, you notice it's a spiritual awakening, not a religious awakening. Very important. It nearly, just for some of you who love to know this kind of stuff, it nearly went religious, because Bill W. was very much influenced, some of the old timers know, by the Oxford group. But it was Lois who kind of helped him. Lois said, "Phil, Phil." That's the way Lois spoke. And Bill said, "What, Lois?" And she said, "Every time you try to preach to the alcoholics, they get drunk." He said, "Well, what should I do?" She said, "Say what it was like, and what happened, and what it's like now. Share, Bill, share. Don't preach." And so that's what we do. We don't preach, because preaching isn't going to get alcoholic well. And if there's something that I happen to say that makes your recovery better, your understanding of your recovery better, then I've done my job. Because there's under no mistake, I'm speaking for me tonight, as well as for you. I always need to hear what I've got to say, as well as you. And by the way, you probably realize I'm not from Ohio. I'm from England. Yeah, I'm from England. I'm not the only alcoholic who came from England. Some of you probably know we had a famous Prime Minister, Winston Churchill. He used to drink a lot. I don't know whether he was alcoholic, but he drank a bottle of brandy a day, and that was just the brandy. The lovely story about Winston Churchill, he was having dinner with Lady Astor. And Lady Astor turned to Winston Churchill and said, Winnie, you're drunk. And Winston Churchill, in his inimitable way, said, Madam, you're ugly. But I shall wake up sober in the morning. She was quick to say this. She says, Winnie, if I was your wife, I'd put poison in your soup. Madam, if I was your husband, I'd drink it. By the way, because this is, I realize this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where I need to be tonight. Is anybody from Al-Anon here? Anybody Al-Anon? Don't be shy, you never used to be. Very good, I've got a story for you, Al-Anon, an Al-Anon story. A lady with 7 years. How many years?
Seven years.
How many?
Seven years
in Al-Anon. But she married badly. She married a very old-fashioned man. And on their wedding night, they went to the bedroom. And the man, he took off his trousers and he threw his trousers in the middle of the bedroom. He says, wife, get into those trousers. She says, I can't get into those trousers. He says, no. And don't forget, who wears the trousers in this marriage? So how many years does she have in Al-Anon? How many? She did no more. She took off her panties. And she threw her panties in the middle of the bedroom. She said, husband, get into those panties. He says, I can't get into those panties. She said, no, and you won't until you change your attitude. Now, some of you may be thinking, what's spirituality to do with panties? Everything. Just so that everybody understands, though, that is one of the most important things is to make connection. And you look at the 12 steps, you look at the traditions, you read the big book. And you don't forget certain things. There are certain things that are emphasized a lot. But you can miss some things. It says principles before personalities. But it doesn't say principles instead of personalities. Believe you me, there are many personalities in this program. Great personalities. One of them recently died, Frank Honeycutt, who is a friend of mine. And Clancy is a great character. And there's been many others. Men and women. So remember that. It doesn't say principles instead of personalities. Principles before. And your personality, when you get sober, will develop. And by the way, that enables you to do something else, which I'm sure this group is very, very good at. But it's supposed to be a program of attraction. I remember that. So that's why the speakers try to do the best they can. Because you don't want to put people off. And by the way, also to be friendly. You have greeters. We are a program of attraction. And what attracts people is not just what we say here, but also how we behave with each other. And it's very important, especially for the newcomer, because you probably realize I don't have the statistics on it, and by the way, most people don't have the statistics on it. But a lot of people don't stay here. A lot of people come and they don't stay. And I'm not saying that we've got to go bouncing over backwards, but that program of attraction is very powerful. And the other thing I do want to say is that religion sometimes divides people up. We need to be very careful that we don't become preachers of a religion. This is not why we're here. There's a big difference. Spirituality is the connection between all human beings. And I don't think I've really ever met a human being that I've not been able to have some connection with. Somebody once put it so beautifully, they said, religion is man-made, but spirituality is God-given. And religion sometimes divides people up. Just like color and race and money. But spirituality teaches the world to hold hands. And so we've got a spiritual program here. And it's very, very, very powerful. And I'm going to share what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And by the way, although it's my story, it'll be your story too. because underneath it all, we're all very, very similar. And although mine took place in England, because I got sober in England, and mine took place around the church, it doesn't make any difference, because it's the same pain, it's the same loss. I've lost like you've lost, and I've gained like you've gained, and those of you who are new, who will gain. Our lives will be incredibly better. And the first step says we're powerless, and our life has become unmanageable. But that's not where we stay. Slowly but surely, some of us start to make amends, and slowly but surely, we begin to start to putting our lives in some kind of order. And maybe for the very first time, some of us realize that we're not a piece of shit, that we're not nothing, that we are somebody. And that I strongly believe that if we're really to be able to love others, we must also begin to love ourselves and to take care of ourselves. And by the way, that's why we're here tonight. We're here tonight to take care of ourselves. And when we come to a meeting, we're beginning to love ourselves. So just for you to know, I started drinking in a public school in England. By the way, a public school in England, it means it's not open to the public. That's one of the funny things about English schools and language, okay? They call it a public school, but it's really private, because you have to pay to go. And it was a boys' school. And in that school, by the way, they used to give us beer to drink. They used to give you beer to drink in the evening. And it wasn't so much that I liked the taste, and it wasn't so much that I got drunk right away, but I liked how I felt when I drank. I'm 5'6", 5'7", on a very good day. But when I drank, I felt 6'2". I had a stutter, I'm talking a stutter. I had a stutter, but when I drank, I lost my stutter. I thought I found a friend. And by the way, just like probably you, I never thought of alcohol as a drug. Alcohol is what people did. Every time I watched television, every time I saw famous people, drink was there. And I found drink. And drink was going to be, by the way, with me. And by the way, there are some people here, and it's a true story what they said. Right from the very first drink, they got drunk. Right from the very beginning, they found that their lives were just a mess with alcohol. But that's not true for every one of us. Remember, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's not the same for every one of us. That's why it's cunning, and it's baffling. I'm an example of a more progressive. So I went through university, and I graduated through university. And in 1971, I was let loose on a church in England. And just like you, I had to have an excuse. And I said, the lost and the lonely, those sheep without a shepherd, I know where they are. And they need me. They're all in the bar. And I'll tell you, if you walk into a bar dressed like this, people notice you. People say, look, there's a penguin at the end of the bar. A walking oil slick's just come in. And I'll tell you, everybody wants to talk to a priest, even if they don't like you. They say things like, you're the kind of priest we like, you drink like we drink, you smoke like we smoke, you throw up like we throw up. Drinks started to come to my church. My church was full of them. People came to see what I was going to say, what I was going to do. And I've said it 1,000 times. Don't say it again. If you're an alcoholic and a driver truck, there's going to be times you're drunk in your truck. If you're an alcoholic and a nurse, there's going to be times you're drunk in the hospital. If you're an alcoholic and a priest, there's going to be times you're drunk doing services. I remember once doing a funeral drunk. I followed the coffin into the hole. Tell you, it's real scary when you hear the amens coming from above. But it was an Irish funeral. Nobody noticed. Then somebody said, look, there's a priest in a hole full of dirt. There's a priest in a hole. And by the way, they just pulled me out. We carried on. We never followed us. It's the channel like that's what priests do, they find a hole.
Go straight in.
Nobody said anything. Nobody said anything. Nobody said anything. Do you want to know why we're here? because our disease got out. Somebody said something. He listened to every one of our stories. We got here because our wives, husbands, mothers, fathers, police, somebody, employer. But nothing happened. Nobody said anything. So I went back, and you know exactly what happened. I carried on. When our disease gets out, that's the beginning of what's called a slow intervention. But until it gets out, and that's why some of the most tragic of alcoholics are the people who live and drink alone. Nobody knows. They're the people you read about who die, die in the night, die in the morning. Maybe your grandmother, maybe grandfather. But I went back and I carried on drinking. And I can't remember, but all I know is it gets worse. And because I'm a priest, I'm doing services. And so that's where things are going to be seen. So after this funeral, nobody said anything, nothing happened. But the next time, he couldn't keep it quiet. Because it was a baptism. And it was a big baptism. I'm talking big. B-I-G-G-E, big. People flew in. Like 200 people. And I was been drinking, but I wasn't drunk. But I'd been drinking. And I'd been mellow. You know when you're mellow? You just mellow. Hey, give me the baby. Come on, give me the baby. I baptized the baby in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Daphne. Daphne. I didn't ask anybody. Daphne. The mother, she let loose such a scream. She said, Father Leo, it's a little boy. He said, I don't care what the hell it is, it's Daphne now. She said, is there anything we can do about it? I said, no. Forever and a day, he will be called Daphne. Father will make amends to a thing like that. But it got out, it didn't stay with the family. She called the bishop. And 3 days later, I got a telephone call from the bishop. Bruce? My name. Bruce? I said, yes. He said, I want to see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Put the phone down. I thought, why does the bishop want to see me? Because, you know, it's a few days afterwards. You know, we're alcoholics. We move on. Tomorrow's a new day. So why did the bishop want to see me? Got it. Promotion. We're not so different. I go see the bishop. I go to see the bishop. The bishop said, I've got a letter. A letter. I've got a letter. I said, good. He said, it's about you, you fool. Are you sick? Are you demented? Are you having a nervous breakdown? Then he looked at me straight in the eyes. He was a small man. He looked at me straight in the eyes. He said, have you been drinking? Have you been drinking? See if you can identify with this. Who? Me? I swear on the Bible. But he didn't believe me. But he couldn't prove it. Ha ha! But you know what he said? Since 1976. My sober date, 77, 4th of July. I got sober just recently on the 4th of July. We don't keep the 4th of July anymore. It's a terrible waste of tea. But you know what he said to me? And he's in Buena Park. Hello here in Buena Park. You know what he said to me? He didn't say go to a meeting. He didn't say go to a hospital. He didn't say go see a therapist. You know what he said? He said, quit it. Just like that. Quit it. I said, quit it? He said, quit it. I said, I'll quit it. You want to know a funny thing in Buena Park? I quit it for 6 months. Well, I wasn't sober. And tell me if you know what I'm talking about. There's a difference between being sober and being dry. I quit it for 6 months. Didn't drink. Said I didn't go to a meeting. I never said I was an alcoholic. I just quit it. And by the way, that 6 months was probably the worst 6 months. Because all the behavior was the same. All the anger was the same. All the control was the same. All the shame, all the same. The only thing is, I'm not drinking. They call it dry. In the meetings, they call it dry. And by the way, dry, very good description. Dry, like a dry leaf. And any pressure you put on a dry leaf snaps, breaks. And I'm serious, you see people like that. So people even who attend meetings, they're not working the program. And how you can always tell. You can always tell. Because you see, they're critics. They're critics of speakers, they're critics of sponsors, they're critics of the big book. You can all, you're critics of the 12 steps. You want to be a critic? You can be a critic. Charles said it very nice. None of us are perfect. None of us are perfect. So of course you're going to find a human being, male or female, in this program. You're not perfect. But you know what? Dry people snap. By the way, they get angry and they snap if they don't go their own way. But then you find them. Things don't go their way, they've got to start another meeting. I'm serious. We all know them. By the way, what is sobriety? Sobriety is learning to bend. Sobriety is when you're not so brittle, you're supple. Supple. You live. And you let live. We live and we let live. Because when we were drinking, we were the critics. We know how, that's, I suppose, where the saying comes in the program. When you point a finger at somebody, you remember, you've got three fingers and a thumb pointing at you. Always remember. Because your resentment, I don't need to tell you, two things, and I've been around this program 26 years, two things. Resentment, get people drunk, and relationships. You get into a relationship before your time. We used to have a rule in England. It was a kind of unofficial rule. First 2 years of your program, you don't get involved in any significant relationship. The first 2 years is to have a relationship with yourself. Now, I know here it's usually about a year. But it's a slippery slope even in our meetings. People get into relationship very, very quickly. Remember, our first goal is to have a relationship with ourselves. Otherwise, you can never do the steps. Because if you don't understand yourself, how can you do these steps? So just need to know, for six months, I didn't drink. And then you may say, oh, when did you have a drink again? How did it happen? Some people think if you're going to have a slip, it'll be on a Friday. Or Saturday, maybe Thanksgiving, 4th of July, Christmas. Watch out for Tuesday. It only happens on a Tuesday. It follows Monday. It kind of just creeps up on you Tuesday. It's a funny little day, Tuesday. And a lot of people are slept on a Tuesday. I had a slip on a Tuesday. And you say, well, how did it happen? I've been drinking 7-Up. I was stood down 7-Up. I'm drinking it for 6 months. And I went to a 21st party. It was a girl's 21st party. And here's another word, coincidence. Here's another one. These words, they just keep coming up. Coincidence. What do we say in the program? Coincidence is God working a miracle. Anonymously. I was at this 21st birthday party, and there was a woman who knew me from the church I used to be at in England. I never expected her there. She was there. And she came over, she said, "Your Father Leo," she said, "I remember you from Brighton, in Hull, Suffolk." She said, "Here's gin and tonic." It's a nice one, a large one, gin and tonic. She said, "That's what you like." I said, "I'm drinking 7-Up." She said, "Here's the gin and tonic." And that was it. On a Tuesday. You've got separate faces. You've not got a program. You've got no sponsor. You've never said you're an alcoholic. You just try. And here's the strange thing. I bet some of you would have said, if you had a drink on that Tuesday night, I bet you had about 6. Because you had a drink and you'd be... Oh. Remember what the big book said. This disease is cunning, it's suffering, it's powerful, and it's patient. So wait, I had one drink. And then I went home. But here's, we talk about stories. Say, here's a funny thing. It's a watch. Now some of you are saying, well, what's the watch got to do with this? Well, what's the watch about? Well, it's just me. I'm sorry. I'm going to talk. I left the watch because I washed my hands. And I left the watch in the restroom. And the next morning, I wake up. Where's my watch? So I called the barman and said, "Where was my friend? Well, I had one drink." I called the barman at the hotel where the 21st was. I said, "Did you find a watch?" He said, "I found a watch in the restroom." I said, "It's fine." He said, "Well, come and get it." I said, "Right. Go to get the watch." The barman says, "Have one for the road." Same bar. Hey, same barman. Could have been the same glass and the same bottle of gin. But when I took the drink, the line was disturbed. And if you're an alcoholic, you know exactly what you mean. The line was disturbed. And last night, one drink. That morning when I took that drink, I knew I needed another one. And by the way, then another one. So I had 3 quick drinks. And then I went to another bar, and another bar, and another bar. And by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, in England, 3rd of July, 1977, I was as drunk as a skunk. And I'm driving home drunk. My car hit a tree, the car hit a tree, the car hit a tree and hit a lamppost. And the car that I was in shot up. The car shot up in the air like a rocket. You know, like a rocket? Two old ladies in the garden said, "Look, there goes Father Leo." That's how he travels now. Hey, him stay there. Crash, bang, boom. Now, by the way, I was the only one hurt, bleeding. You come say hello to me afterwards. Some people do that after a speech, you come say hello. You see 7 stitches here. Head was cut, knee. Maybe you had something similar. This was, by the way, my moment. Don't forget this word. For the moment in every alcoholic life when you see yourself. My moment was the car crash, because what happened, I'm sitting and bleeding. I'm waiting for the ambulance. And the police. And I'm sitting, and then all of a sudden, stepped outside. No, I'm looking at me.
I'm now looking at me. You know, I don't like what I see. And I don't like what I've become. I don't like this person. Now, there's many moments in this room, but I'll tell you one thing. You had a moment. If you're in this room and you're an alcoholic, you had a moment. Mine, it was a car crash. Yours, you could have woke up in a jail. And you know something? You know you're not a criminal. You're in jail. Some of you love your family. You love your mom. You love your father. And you cut your moment for seeing your mother and your father or grandmother crying about you. Crying! You shouldn't be old crying like that about you. Some of you have a wife, and you know what? You saw your wife, and her face is messed up. You know who messed her will face up? You. There's many moments in this room. Some of us we find very hard to talk about. Some of you have got kids, you know something? And you love your kids. You know, you try to be a good mother and you try to be a good father. You love your kids, but you know what? Your kids don't want to talk to you. In many moments. And I'd love to be able to say to you, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that if you had a moment, then you're home and dry. But it's not true. Having a moment doesn't get you sober. Every drunk who's outside in Grainer Park tonight has had these moments, because we've had many moments. If you want to know what the miracle is, it's keeping the moment alive. Now that's the miracle. You don't forget. Now the Jews have said to the world and to the admiration of the world, we'll talk about the Holocaust. We'll write about the Holocaust. We'll speak about the Holocaust. Because if we don't, it could all come back. Now you think about a different Holocaust that's claimed far more than 6 million lives. And we write about it, and we talk about it, and we have sayings up on walls about it, and we have sets and traditions about it. You know why? Because if we don't, it will all come back. You want to know a name for Alcoholics Anonymous? It's the people of remembrance. That's who we are. With every meeting, every big book study, every tradition, every time you meet with another alcoholic, something's going on, what it was like, and what happened. By the way, what happened is the moment. And what it's like now. Now, all you have to do as you're sitting here tonight is just remember the moment. That's why we come. And it was whether Charles was talking, or whether I'm talking, or the tapes that you purchase and you listen to, every speaker, at some point, said something a little bit about what was going on. And then there's the big one. Just a moment. Now all the people that came to these meetings and no longer come back, they're drunk now. Whoever they are, assuming they're drunk, they still had a moment. They shared the moment maybe with you. But you want to know why we're the winners? Because we keep the moment alive. We are the people of remembrance. And by the way, that's why you go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And even after the 90 days, those of us who have the opportunity to get to a meeting, even when we're traveling like I do, we still go to a meeting. And it doesn't matter what the language is, and it doesn't matter what the country is, it doesn't matter what the speaker looks like. It's always the same. What it was like. And what happened? So guess what? I get taken to the hospital.
I get carried to the hospital emergency room, and I put a call through to the bishop. Now you think about who you spoke with. Doctor, employer, and I went into treatment. I went into treatment for 3 months. And you know what happened. After I was detoxed and I went into treatment, you know what happened. Like everybody, I got on a bus and I went to AA meetings. And that's what I did. Now, again, remember, not everybody's the same here. There are some people who didn't like the AA meetings when they first went. They just didn't like to hear it. Just didn't want them, didn't connect with it. This guy, I went to my first AA meeting. I heard a Jewish woman in England share her story. I was a survivor of the Holocaust, had a number on her arm, succumbed to alcoholism. She shared a story. Jewish woman. An immigrant from Germany. And I tell you, I heard the story and I was wrapped in attention. Even though she was every way different from me, it was the same. It was the same pain. It was the same helplessness. It was the same tears. And you know something? I knew I was home. Now you remember, I spent my life in the church. No church helped me like this. No church. No Bible reading helped me like this. No minister helped me like this. Still, to this day, in 2003, the biggest, single, most effective program for alcoholics is Alcoholics Anonymous. Throughout the world. When I went in 1977, when I got sober in 1977, and I went, there were very few AA meetings in England then. Now, all over the place. All over the place now in England. If you ever go to England, you go to a city, you've got a meeting nearly every night, if not every night. Now, it's not as big as this. But there are meetings. And by the way, when I was in treatment, I started to look at the steps. And the first thing that hit me was the steps. It's steps. Now what's steps? When you do steps, it means you're moving. So nobody ever says, Frank, will you come up and read the 12 standstills? Do you know something? We are not about standing still. And you know what happens? Your first month here, first few weeks here, first month here, first 6 months, first year, you start moving. You start moving in your life. Charles said it. We have a different attitude today. We behave differently today. There is one time we fight, fight, fight. Now we walk away. We live and we let live. We don't make fun of other groups of people. We who are wounded know how to take care of the wounded. Because we've been wounded. There's very, very little prejudice in AA meetings. And by the way, if there is, you clean it up. You don't hear me use foul language. You don't hear me use MF this and MF that. You know why? Because I used to do that when I drank. Sobriety is very easy for me. Because it's the opposite. You know, I know what I did, so I stole. I don't steal. It's very simple for me. This is not brain surgery. You used to steal, you don't steal anymore. You didn't make your bed. You didn't make your bed and you didn't polish your shoes. You didn't polish your shoes. You were a drunk who didn't polish your shoes. Now you make your bed and you polish your shoes. You don't use MF this and MF that. No, you don't. Not anymore. When you don't use racist jokes, and we're not prejudiced. But you follow this program. Now, if you think you're here just because you want to stop drinking, you only need step one. Because you probably figured out by now, the other 11 steps don't mention alcohol. You're not going to find alcohol mentioned again on the steps.
It's a change of an attitude, and it's a change of a behavior. And what you suddenly start to realize is, it's the opposite. So you didn't floss. I'll call it, some didn't floss. Some of them didn't floss. They just didn't floss. Now you floss. You take care of your teeth. By the way, these are small things. Let me tell you something. These are the big things that build character. These are the things that build character. None of us are going to save the world. But you make your bed. And you clean your teeth. And you respect the planet that you walk on. You don't want to be somebody who has a sticker saying keep it simple, day at a time, and then throw cigarettes out of the window. That's not the program. And we don't steal. And by the way, I unfortunately came to this meeting because I came straight from England and I haven't had a chance to go to the bank with it being Saturday, and I only had a dollar. But I can tell you, I never put a dollar in the meeting. I put five. Because you see, when I came into the meeting, I put a dollar in. It was 26 years ago. You smoke? So is this meeting more important to you than a packet of cigarettes? Your generosity is a key thing. I've heard people say AA saved their lives. If it saved your life, then contribute to something that can save another person's life. It's a small thing. Maybe it's a small thing, but it builds your character. And by the way, when I was there, I was in the meeting for a treatment center for 3 months, and then six months in a recovery home. 9 months. And at first didn't want to go in the treatment, but went. By the way, certainly didn't want to go 6 months in a recovery home, but I went. And that's what I heard, what you've heard. It's not what you want, it's what you need. And there's a big difference between what you want and what you need. By the way, you've got to get it back in abundance. I've always said to alcoholics who are in recovery, money's going to be the last of your problems. Because now you're employable. And you heard it said here, you find a God as you understand God. And it doesn't have to be a Catholic God, it doesn't have to be a priest, and it certainly doesn't have to be a church. But you get rid of the old God of judgment. You get rid of that old God that made you afraid. And you find a God of love. And a God of transformation. We've only just begun. You and I, we've only just begun. Maybe I don't see your face for a long time. But I know this, if you stay sober and you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, then believe you me, abundance is yours. Because you're employable. Relationships? Of course. Because you're going to be a wonderful person who wouldn't want to be with you. Who wouldn't want to be with you? Of course. This is absolutely, you remember what I said. The 12 steps, only the first one mentions alcohol. Having had a spiritual awakening. I'm somebody. Spiritual awakening. I am somebody. And I have a right to be here. And I do not apologize for being here. I have paid my dues to be here. And I know it's fashionable in Alcoholics Anonymous to say God got you sober, but it really isn't true. God wanted you sober. You have to want it too. God doesn't make anybody get sober. And we paid our dues. In the short time I've had a chance to talk to some of the people here, some of you really have paid your dues to be here. You hold your head up high. You've earned a seat at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always remember, God wanted you sober, you have to want it too. into a grand smile with God. That's the spiritual awakening. But believe you me, you're important. And don't let any sponsor, and don't let anybody in AA say that you're not important. Because you're very important. Because you carry the message. And believe you me, you make choices. Whether you're going to say hello to somebody or whether you're not. Otherwise, you get into this crazy idea like you're a puppet. And God's pushing you around. You want to know how scary this is? You are free enough to drink again. That's how scary it is. And some of us have met people who've gone out again. So believe you me, if you were beaten up when you were drinking with self-esteem and low self-esteem and low self-worth, believe you me, you start building that up again. Now, I was speaking in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm coming to the end now of my talk. Because then I'll be driving back to Long Beach to get some sleep. But I was about 16 years ago. It's usually one of the most popular things I've put on the tape. Seriously. About 16 years ago, I'm speaking about 800 people. Maybe more. It's an AA convention in Atlanta, Georgia. And this guy comes up to me, David. He stands in the line because in Georgia he says, thank you. And this David comes up to me. He's David. He's about 19, 20. He says, hey, I'm David. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I said, oh, hi, Dave. He said, I'm in a recovery home. Got 3 months. Right. He said, I liked what you said about the moment. I said, oh. I said, did you have a moment? Did you have a car crash? He said, I had a moment. I didn't have a car crash. I had a moment. He said, I heard what you said. You talked about a moment. I said, you're right. He said, do you think that God can speak to you through a song? Oh. I said, yeah. Always. Poets, writers, musicians, artists, always have been very spiritual. Surely God can speak to you. So now he said, I had a moment. And he said, until I heard you speak, I didn't realize it. But he said, I was in my apartment. And he said, have you ever listened to a song, but you never heard it? You listened, but you never heard it. And then all of a sudden you heard it. I said, yeah. He said, because I was going to go get some crack. I know what I was doing. He said, I was in the apartment. I got my coat on. I'm going out the door. So then the song came on. And it stopped me. The song just stopped me in my tracks. I said, what's the name of the song? He said, the group that sang the song, Rose would come, came from your country. The Beatles. And he said, the song has since been made famous by Tina Turner. I said, what were the words of the song? He said, I'm going to tell you, because those words, they're the words that stopped me. The words of the song were these. When I was a young man, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help. In any way. But now those days are gone. I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind. And I've opened up the door. So help me. Help me if you can. I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Would you please, help me? He said, Father Leo, there was help for me in these rooms. I said, I know, David, because some years before there was help for me too. You came here for help tonight? Then you've got it. And who knows, you may be somebody who will help somebody else. You never know what gesture can touch another suffering alcoholic's life. And there's three things you'll get And that's a promise. First, you will love again, as you've never loved before, and begin to love yourself. Secondly, you'll develop a life again, and you'll live again, as you've never lived before. And third, and certainly just as important as the other two, some of us will start to laugh again. We'll laugh again, like we've never laughed before. God bless you and all those you love. Thank you. Thank you.